So let me find my state flip chart. Ta-da. Little mind map. I think I just changed your state. So when we're in a particular state, again, I'm talking about, you know, your mind, body, spirit system, the whole system as being in a state. And our states are, in general, pretty fluid. Your state can change with the slightest little thing. It can change with where you're putting your attention. It can change with how you move your body. It can change with what you're thinking, what you believe is true or not true, whether or not you agree or disagree with someone or something. All of that can shift your state. And so it's this very fluid, dynamic process of going from one state to another. So some of the ways that you can access or change a state, I want to start with memory. So we've touched on this already a few times where one way of accessing a particular state is to remember a time when you experienced that state. Now one of the reasons that this happens in our brain is because the unconscious mind responds to the present moment. It thinks everything is happening right here, right now. So whatever's happening in your experience in the present moment is what your unconscious mind is responding to. So if I have a memory, like if I remember something from my past and that's playing out on the screen of my consciousness and I'm seeing this, like yesterday when I had you remember the argument, an argument with somebody, if I start playing that argument out on the screen of my consciousness, my unconscious mind goes, oh, I'm experiencing an argument right now. And it responds with the feelings to what's happening in your consciousness in the present moment. So the unconscious mind is always responding to what's happening right now. So a memory, you experience everything in the past in the present moment. Does that make sense? Okay? It's not happening right now. What you're experiencing is your memory of it, but you're experiencing the memory in the present moment. That's what your unconscious mind responds to. So your memory, you can access states by remembering them. When you remember them, and there's nuances as to how much of the state you'll get and so on, which are some of these other factors, but that those feelings come up. And so if I want to feel confident, I can go back to a time when I felt really confident and bring that state up in the present moment. So that's a very powerful way of accessing states. Fantasy or imagination is another way where in your mind, you're again, unconscious mind is paying attention to what's happening in your consciousness right now. So with fantasy or imagination, I can, with my imagination, imagine something happening in the future, and that's playing on the screen of my consciousness. And so my unconscious mind responds to that. And it goes, well, that's what's happening right now, because I'm having this experience. Now, sometimes that can be really nice. That's why I like the word fantasy. I mean, isn't it fun to fantasize about, you know, maybe you're going on that Hawaiian vacation you always wanted to go to and being on the beach and seeing the beauty of the place, or maybe winning the lottery, fantasizing about how would I spend that money? What would I do with that money? And of course, there's the whole class of fantasy about like, ooh, it'd be awesome to be in a relationship with this person, okay? And when you fantasize about something, don't feelings come up with that? So it's a powerful way of accessing state through our imagination, imagining something. Now, also, in contrast, memory and imagination are ways that we put ourselves in unresourceful states. So if I remember a time when I if I go back into my past and remember a really unpleasant experience, those feelings also come up. Or if I imagine something bad happening in the future, then I get to be fearful in the moment. I used to be literally phobic of public speaking. Phobic, like a full-blown phobia of public speaking. In high school, we had an assignment where we had to read a poem in front of the class. We didn't even have to write the poem. We just had to read the poem in front of the class. I had anxiety for weeks before that. And I got so worked up about it, so I showed up. I didn't show up to school. I got sick that day. I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to stand in front of the group and read a poem. So I had to do a lot of work, and I credit NLP primarily for helping me get over that, so that I could, now I enjoy it. I like being here. I'm doing what I love to do. And so I was able to overcome that. But what I would do, here's how I would freak myself out. Now I know how I did it. What I do is I would imagine being in front of the group of people and doing something humiliating, like doing something that they would laugh at me or they'd criticize me or something along those lines. And I would get terrified and freeze and not know what to do. And the worst fear was like being frozen in front of the group and not being able to move, not be able to do anything. And they're laughing at me. And I would play this vividly in my mind, you know, and work myself up into this horrible state. And it was all an act of the imagination. I could have imagined being up here, being articulate, relaxed, being able to express myself well, to dance with the group. And that's eventually what I did, is I just harnessed the same force, the same power, to get myself in a good state. How likely am I to perform better if I do that? Just like we did with the new behavior generator, right? You're using the imagination to mentally rehearse how you want to be instead. So that's a powerful way of accessing states. Memory and imagination are the kind of the two big categories of being able to access or change a state. Let me see, where do I want to go next? How about let's go into music? So auditory. You know, they put soundtracks in movies for a reason, right? They evoke emotion. So if there's something dramatic going on in the movie, there's usually some music that's going to complement that, or adventure, some piece of adventure, or it could be horror, suspense, or it could be comedy. And they put those the soundtrack in there for a reason, because it evokes a state. And so how many of you, you know, some music comes on, like some boogie music or something like that, and it's like you can hardly stop yourself from moving, puts you in a state. Or listening to something very relaxing, something, you know, either classical music or something more new age, ambience music, and that stuff really works for me. So music can be a powerful thing. And how many of you get like a song stuck in your head, right? You know, and how many of you can change the channel, change it to a different song if you get it? Anybody? Okay. Yeah, it's neat to be able to do that, to be able to switch channels or put another song in there. My kids grew up in the age of Barney, the purple dinosaur, okay? And so I'm walking around work going, I love you, you love me. And this is playing in my head, okay? How does that, you know, it's like, actually it was kind of helpful on some occasions, but annoying most of the time. So I had to learn how to switch it. Or like the commercial jingles and things like that that get stuck. When Gangnam Style, that video came out, I had Gangnam Style running through my mind for weeks. Huh? This thing? Don't get me started. You won't. So that music, but think about if you intentionally put some music inside your head, like you're going in for a job interview or something like that, and you went in and you had the 20th Century Fox opening thing as you walked in the door, dun da 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 da. As you walked in, this is what's in your head. It would likely change your state, hopefully, to something kind of resourceful. Rather than like Jaws, you know, the music. Dun 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 dun.
I have a funny comment to that. I don't like talking on the phone, mm-hmm. So my actual ringtone is the William Bell Overture. So it's like really like, oh my God, my phone is ringing. This is awesome. And then it gets me excited to talk on the phone.
Right. Nice. So music is another way. Metaphor is another way of changing your state. Did I mention the metaphor the first day of the smooth seas do not make skillful sailors?
Yeah.
And how powerful that was for me? You know, just some way of thinking about one thing in terms of another can be a very powerful way of changing your state. I did a consulting project one time with the U.S. Forest Service in Elko, Nevada. They were having problems with miners who had mining contracts in Nevada are 99-year contracts to be able to mine land. And it's managed by the U.S. Forest Service. So what would happen is the mining contracts would run out and they'd have to either quit or move to another area. The intent is to not overmine an area. So the Forest Service folks would come in and tell these miners, hey, okay, time up. And they're like, you can't tell us what to do with our land. You know, my father mined this land and my grandfather mined this land. And they got very angry and upset. Well, miners have access to dynamite. And there were bomb threats of car bombs and things like that against the Forest Service folks saying, you will not tell us what to do with our land. So they called us in to do mediation and negotiation training for these Forest Service folks. Well, the Forest Service, they operate from a total family metaphor. At least this office did in Elko. They have a total they call their meetings family meetings. They refer to each other as brother and sister. And the thing, and it's not religious. It's a family metaphor. They consider themselves stewards of the land, and they're the tree huggers. You know, they love the land and the nature, and they have this strong stewardship feeling of the land. Well, the Bureau of Land Management, who is also involved in this, they're more like a military organization. They operate more like a military, they have a military metaphor. So when they go in, they have their battle plan and their targets, their strategy. So you get Forest Service people and Bureau of Land Management people coming into the same meeting, and they're operating from completely different metaphors. So the Bureau of Land Management is going to go in and blow them out of the water. What are the Forest Service people doing?
Hugging.
Okay, they want to come in and, you know, make one big happy family. So we had to figure that out. Why was there so much discord between, you know, the miners and the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management? So metaphor is a powerful way of organizing. I know certain women who operate from a Cinderella metaphor. They're still waiting for their prince to come to rescue from the evil stepmom kind of a thing. And yet I have male friends, one in particular, who operates from a superhero metaphor. I literally believe he has a Batman costume in the closet and he goes out on the rooftops at night. Yeah. And it's funny because he's into, you know, cosplay and the comic cons and things like that. And he spends a huge amount of time and energy building his costumes and things. Pretty amazing. So metaphor is a big one. Let's go up. Oh, so we talked about adjusting the body a lot, you know, adjusting your physiology and how that can change your state. Redirecting your attention is another powerful way of changing your state. Where are you focusing your attention? And we talked about that a little bit with, you know, buying a new car or something like that, where all of a sudden now you have a filter for something. So you see things differently or you hear things differently if you have a goal or an intent or something like that. When people are depressed, for example, oftentimes what they're focused on is all of the things that are wrong in their past. So they go back to, and they remember clearly the slights, the hurts, the mistreatments, all of those different things. They relive them vividly and they focus their attention on them and then project those into the future through imagination, that what they see down the road is more of that stuff coming. So that's an excellent strategy for creating depression. When just as easily you could put on a filter and look into your past for all of the things that went well. All of the honoring, the good times and that kind of thing, and project that off into the future through imagination. So it's redirecting your attention. Now, you notice when I've been doing demonstrations, every once in a while I'll do some odd, out of context question like, you know, did you notice the this or that, how much blue there is in the room? All I'm doing is redirecting attention at that point, okay? And it shifts their state. It'll shift them out of the state that they're in into some neutral state, and then I can help them shift into another state. So that's redirecting attention. Smells. Smells can be very, very powerful anchors. I would imagine, this might be too much information. But my first real girlfriend, wore this perfume. It was Halston perfume. And I have such a powerful anchor to that perfume that I have bought that perfume for every other woman that I've been involved with, okay? For me, okay? It works really well for me, okay? It puts me in a lovely state. So, but there also, you know, for example, I remember when I moved out into West, when I lived in Salt Lake City, I moved out to West Jordan, bought this new house, and I went for a walk around the block, and as I went around the block, I could smell bacon cooking. Somebody was cooking bacon. And it took me back to my childhood when my mom would, it was always Sunday, we had the big, cool, big breakfast, you know, bacon and eggs and sausage and things like that. It was cereal the rest of the week. But we got the, you know, the big breakfast. And how much I looked forward to that, having the big breakfast. And so whenever I smell bacon, I go back there. It brings that all that feeling back, all the delight in having the big breakfast. Now I'm trying to be healthy and, you know, take it easy on the bacon. But it's still, the smell of it is a powerful anchor. let's see. Where do I want to go next? Shifting perceptual positions we talked about yesterday, right? Of being able to look through your own eyes versus somebody else's eyes through a neutral third party perspective, and how looking at experiencing something through each of those perceptual positions can profoundly change your state. Association and dissociation. Association tends to bring on more feeling, more of a state, whereas dissociation would tend to either be a different state or much less or even none of the state. So being able to shift your perceptual position is a powerful way of changing state. There's one that's not on the chart that I want to, that I think is really powerful, and it's modeling somebody else. So you can take on somebody else's way of being. Yeah?
Well, I was going to say, wouldn't smells go under memory, metaphor, and music more?
It might, on a different flip chart.
Yes, sir.
So I didn't actually... I think I did this alphabetically. A, C, yeah, that's, it's an alphabetical, well, what, yeah, R, okay? So it's in alphabetical order.
Nicely done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's also in the color of the order of the rainbow, by the way. So modeling somebody else. How many of you saw the Matrix movies, the Matrix trilogy, okay? And hopefully liked it. It's one of my favorite series, okay? The Matrix. So in the second Matrix movie, there's this scene where Morpheus is coming back to Zion, and he brings his ship back, and he's in trouble with his commander because he didn't come back when he was ordered to. He had to go see the Oracle. So Morpheus comes back to Zion, and as soon as he steps off the ship, there are these guys that are like, Commander Locke wants to see you. And he's like, am I being taken to the brig? And he says, no, Commander Locke just wants to talk to you. So he takes him back, and he's in Commander Locke's office. And Commander Locke is not pleased at all with Morpheus. And he's like, and saying, you violated a direct command. He said, if it were up to me, you would never step on another ship again. And Morpheus is completely unruffled. He's not disturbed in the least by this. And he just calmly looks at him and says, if it were up, he says, I'm just grateful that it's not up to you. You know, and I thought, oh my gosh, I want to be like Morpheus in that. I want to be able to stay completely unruffled if somebody else is in a funky state. In other words, I'm going to stay resourceful no matter what anybody else is doing. Now, I had in Youth Corrections another example of that where there was this one kid who was a white supremacist. He was part of the war. I don't know if you've ever heard of war, white Aryan resistance. Okay, it's a very organized group, and they're a scary, very scary extremist group. So I have him out on a restitution project with a group of kids out in the courtyard. And he's getting off task. So I keep prompting him to get back on task because we're not supposed to give them credit for restitution if they're not doing the work kind of a thing. And so I keep telling him, you know, you got to get back on task. I'm trying to help him because if he goes in front of the parole board and he doesn't have his hours, he's getting six to nine more months. So I'm trying to help him. So I keep prompting him, and finally he gets upset with me, and he comes up and gets right in my face, and he says, I am so tired of you telling me what I can and can't do and what to do and all this stuff. He says, I could make a phone call right now, call my brothers, and have your family executed. How would you like to see your wife and kids die right in front of your eyes? And he's like right up in my face telling me this. And I said, you know, Ben, that's all very interesting. You can kill my family later. You need to get back on the restitution project because you need to get your hours in because you got a parole hearing coming up, okay? Wow. I was not going to let him ruffle my feathers. At the time, I had the belief, you do not have the right to determine my thoughts, feelings, and actions for me. That's my job. That's my right. That's my privilege. I don't grant it to you, least of all you. So I became strongly self-referencing in that point. I was not going to let him intimidate me. Because he was just trying to intimidate me to get me back off, right? Got him back on task and all of that. Now later, see, I could have pommeled him with that. With that kind of a threat, I could have charged him. I could have, you know, he could have gone to trial, the whole thing, because that's an assault. And they get extra penalties because I was a correctional officer at the time. And I could have nailed him with that. What I did, though, is I took the opportunity later, and I went back after all the emotion settled down, and we had a talk about that. One, how inappropriate and ineffective that was. And then I wanted to get back in rapport with him to try to help him make the positive shifts, kind of a thing. But the point of this is that I modeled Morpheus.
Yes.
Okay? And it worked very, very well. Sometimes Gandalf is my model, okay? See, I'm already Larry the Gray, okay? And with each new gray hair, I'm getting closer to becoming Larry the White. So that's where I'm headed here. And so sometimes, one time I had a major change that I wanted to make in my life, and so that in my head, I had this metaphor that this part of me was like a beast. And that when the beast showed up, I behaved in ways that I didn't want to behave like. So what I did is I envisioned that was like the Balrog, you know, the big flaming creature, you know, and that's coming at him, and he puts his staff down and says, "You shall not pass." I mean, I just gave myself chills doing that. That was just awesome. That's such a sense of power. So I stood up to the Balrog in my head and said, "You will not pass. I will not grant you access to my hands, nor my mouth. You will not pass." Now, later, I've learned more elegant ways of dealing with those inner things, right? So, believe it or not, Balrog is positively intended, just like every other part. And so, there's more elegant ways of doing that. But, you know, modeling, metaphor, it's awesome. It works really well. Adjusting, we did. Okay, submodalities. So, a quick intro into submodalities. We've touched on it a little bit so far, and some of you are well acquainted with submodalities. But when we talk about the pictures in your head, the inner dialogue, the sounds that you hear, and the feelings that you have, that there are qualities of those representations. So if you're making pictures inside your head, they might be in color or black and white, they might be moving or still, they might be clear or fuzzy, they might be close or distant. There's lots of different submodality distinctions to the pictures. With auditory, there's location, where is the sound coming from? There's volume, there's tempo, there's pitch, there's lots of other distinctions of the auditory. We're going to explore this more later, but just an intro. And then kinesthetic, there might be, you know, pressure, duration, intensity, how much of your body it takes up. There's lots of other kinesthetic distinctions about our feeling representations as well. So just for fun, I'd like you to, since we're heading off into lunch here in a moment, think of your favorite food. Okay? Whatever your favorite food is, you know, it's the one that you really, really love. Maybe you overindulge a little bit. Okay? Think of your favorite food. Now, how many of you can see it? Okay? See your favorite food. Now, is it in color or black and white?
Color.
Is it moving or still? Still? You're not like chasing a wildebeest or anything, right? No. Okay. Slowly rotating. Any steam rising up off of it, maybe? Is it clear or fuzzy?
Clear.
Clear. Is it close? Like, how close is it in your visual field? Like, put your hands where it is. Okay. Okay. Close enough to eat, right? To grab. Okay. It's funny, sometimes with groups, they'll go, "It's right here." Now, just for an experiment, thinking of your favorite food, take it from color and turn it to black and white. Does it increase its appeal or decrease its appeal?
Decrease.
Keeping it black and white, and I'd like you to turn it from clear to fuzzy. So it's black and white and fuzzy. Does that increase or decrease its appeal? Now taking from black and white, fuzzy, and now move it twice as far away from you that it was before. Okay? Increase or decrease? All right. Okay, now put it back. Bring it back close, right where it was before. Clear up that picture. Bring back the color so that it can be your favorite food again. Okay? Ah, ooh, that looks so much better. All right. So now, isn't it fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that what you were thinking about stayed the same? How you were thinking about it changed how you felt about it. Now, this is a powerful, powerful realization about the way we run our noodle up here, not to use another food metaphor. But so being able to change the submodalities can dramatically change how you feel about something. Think how useful this would be, like if you lose control over something, some other kind of food, and you needed to turn down its appeal a little bit. Now you know exactly how to do it. You know how to turn down the appeal of certain kinds of foods. Maybe there's other kinds of foods that you want to have more appeal. Maybe a healthier kind of food, something like that, that you'd like to bring more into your diet. You can turn up the appeal of that food to motivate yourself to eat that kind of food. Isn't that amazing? That's like a superpower. I think it's awesome. Now let's try an auditory one. So many of you said, I want to quiet that inner voice. Right? So we talked yesterday about that inner critical voice, right? Who has one? Anyone? Okay, few. So get a sense, is that critical voice on one side or the other, or where is it in relationship to you? Okay? Point to it where you hear it. Okay? So for many of you, it's on one side or the other, back behind you, okay? Up. So, and it may be a little above or below kind of a thing. So just noticing the location of it. Notice also the volume. How loud is that voice? Okay. Too loud, I hear. So just noticing how loud the volume is. Is it your voice or somebody else's voice? Okay. For how many of you is it your voice? Okay. Most of you. Anybody get somebody else, like mom or teacher or somebody else? Okay. Now, just with that alone, if you were to move the location of that critical voice, move it down to your big toe as if there were a speaker coming out of your big toe, and that voice, all you're doing is moving the location down to your big toe so that you can hear it coming out of a speaker in your big toe. Still saying the same thing, same volume. Is that different in your experience? Does it change how you feel in response to that voice? Now, what if you turned down the volume so that it was quieter and quieter and quieter, so that you had just this little whisper coming out of your big toe? Does that change your feeling response to it? Now, turn it into Mickey Mouse's voice coming out of your big toe, okay? Oh, you big dummy, why'd you do that? Whispering out of your big toe. Still saying the same thing. What's that like? Can you take that seriously?
No.
Okay. So now, if you want, you can put your critical voice back where you had it before, but you don't have to. You can leave it down there. You can move it anywhere you want. You can turn down the volume, anything you want. Experiment with it and find out, you know, what can I shift in terms of the submodalities that's going to help me make this so it's not limiting me or in some way negatively affecting me. But there's also ways to maybe turn it into a resource, and we're going to explore more of that later this afternoon. So, with that, we better throw the munch.